This episode is brought to you by EFG Holding, a trailblazing financial institution with a universal bank in Egypt and the leading investment bank in the Middle East and North Africa. Welcome again to What I Did Next from A&T Media. I'm Malak Fouad. I welcome a new guest from the region on each episode, and we take a deep dive into their lives' most pivotal moments. On today's episode, Malak Elbaba tells me how channeling her creative side makes her a better leader.
In career, I strongly believe that, you know, everyone owns his or her own career path and trajectory. So I was very much aware of what I wanted to do. I think the marketing kind of satisfied the passion that I had for the movie direction and the art person in me.
The creative side of you.
The creative side of
yeah.
me. And this is a very big side that I still have to
yes.
do. And I always tell my team now in business, you know, when we're pitching, when we're doing any business, it's all about storytelling.
Yes, of course.
I'm a strong believer in storytelling.
Malak Elbaba is a country manager for Visa in Egypt and a leader and role model for so many in her industry. Although she has spent nearly two decades in banking and finance, she actually started out wanting to become a diplomat. But destiny had other plans, shaping not just her career, but who she married and where she lives today. I sometimes do introductory calls with my guests to break the ice before we put a mic in front of them. Malak and I clicked right away and there was no ice to break. Our conversation flowed naturally and we discovered we were about to be neighbors, as I was moving to her neck of the woods shortly after our interview. Malak's fierce intellect and people skills were the first things I noticed about her. She believes in teamwork, placing great emphasis on company culture and the people she has encountered on her way up the ladder. As you're about to hear, Malak doesn't just have a great professional story, she also has an incredible personal story, from growing up in Beirut to becoming a runaway bride. It's this blend of personal and professional pivots that made this conversation so impactful and memorable. Let's start with her early life. Malak was born and raised in Lebanon during the Civil War years.
So my parents, and specifically my father, was one of those who insisted to stay in Lebanon. And I still recall all those discussions that he had at night with my mom while they thought we were sleeping, but we were not because of all the bomb sounds and everything that is happening around us. And she would every night ask him, when are we leaving? And every night he would say, if I left and if we all left, who would stay?
What was his work?
So he used to own several factories, out of which most of them were down to ashes through bombs. And he started literally all over again, putting brick by brick in hand, literally, to start all over again. And he did this twice, one through the Israeli invasion and another one through the civil war in Lebanon. And I think I learned from him a lot through this that, you know, you never take no as an answer, even if it was a bomb. You start all over again. There's always a restart, a refresh. And this resilience, I think, and this strength that he had, and now me being a mother and knowing how naturally as a parent you're always worried about your kids, about their future, about their well-being, about their security, and still going on in such circumstances is really amazing. You know, I can't grasp it.
And I'm sure he didn't want you to realize how worried he was.
Yes.
And that's very hard to try and keep it together and not show for the children.
Actually, it was him and my mom. My mom was a working mom eventually because my dad has always been on the road all the time. And we are three kids, very close in age. So by nature, she had to stay at home to take care of us. And she always pretended to be super strong and that there's nothing that is happening and that we are all okay, while eventually we were not okay and it wasn't safe and it wasn't the right environment to raise children in there. But she did it. And I think, you know, every time I'm asked as a woman leader, who is your idol from a woman? And I have this cliche answer, it is my mom, because, you know, the strength that she had in, you know, not knowing if my father is alive, every single day, because there was no connection, there was no mobile at the time, not knowing if, you know, if we are going to get back from school every day, as kids, you know. I think she is a superwoman that I'm forever grateful for being raised by
her. Are your parents still alive?
No, both of them passed away.
But way after the war?
Way after the war, yeah.
So they saw you married, they met your
son. My mom met my son for a good 6 months,
okay,
actually. And the plan, you know, again, the cliche plan that we wanted to give birth in another country for the nationality. But then last minute, I decided I'm doing this whole process in Beirut with her, so that she can
be with you,
be with me, wow, and acknowledge and live all of this. And I never regret this.
Yeah, and nationality can be acquired.
And there are more, you know, there are those memories and moments that you cannot replicate, unfortunately. Mm. And I'm really happy that she was able to enjoy and experience, even for a very little time.
And where are your siblings?
My siblings are now here in Egypt, actually. So after my mom passed away, I think she was home to all of us. So we decided, and actually she raised us in a way to be super interconnected. And I think that's one of her legacies. So they decided to take a chance and to move here so that they're closer to me.
Interesting. Are you the eldest?
I'm the youngest.
Well, you're the youngest.
I'm the youngest.
And they followed
you. The most impactful, probably.
How funny. And they followed you.
They followed me, yes.
That's lovely.
Yes.
So, that's nice.
My brother first with his wife and his kids, and then my sister. And she also happened to, later on, she got married to an Egyptian as well. So,
Egypt, so you are Egyptian, all of you.
Egypt is home, and it's lovely to have family here.
Of course, it's a big thing. It's a very, very huge advantage to be near your
absolutely.
Family. I think
absolutely.
It's priceless, actually. Tell me a little bit about the first steps into the world of work.
I started work probably when I was 15 or 16. I decided I'm not taking money from anyone, even my father, and I'm going to be the super independent girl. I had many summer jobs and internships. I worked as a waitress. I worked as a receptionist. I taught Arabic for elderly. So many jobs, private tutoring, and so on and so forth. And then my dream was to become a movie director. And I had Yusuf Shaheen as my idol. And I remember I met him once in the airport and I was going to faint, you know, when I just saw him and shook hands. When I was in school, I was a straight A student and I was going to the scientific section, which is part of the Lebanese baccalaureate back then. And the last day before the first day of my senior school year, I went to the school principal and I told her, I want to move to the literary section. And she went crazy. I was like, Malak, you're number one in school. I was like, I know what I want. So back and forth, debates, and then I continued. Then I had to convince my parents, specifically my mom, that this is the career I want. And for cultural reasons, she stopped this dream. And she wanted me to pursue actually the dream that she wasn't able to continue because of the war situation and because of us.
For herself.
For herself. And me being so inspired by my mom and so connected to her, I decided I'm going to do this. And I studied international affairs, diplomatic and consular services, and development studies. And then I was perceived as the diplomat of the family. And I was getting ready for my exams to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. In parallel, I applied through recruitment agencies for all the NGOs and everything that has to do with the diplomatic relationship. My sister back then was graduating from business mm-hmm. and marketing, mm-hmm. and she sent her CV through the same channel. And destiny plays its role. They just switched our CVs. And Maya starts her career in an NGO. And I start my career in banking.
How funny.
And I had like, I don't know, I remember there were like 5-6 banks calling me for interviews, you know. I had the President's Award and straight A student.
Yes.
So this is
yes,
and
you were a good candidate for
good
them.
Candidate for an entry for an entry student. I did all the interviews. I thought, okay, I'll start until the exams of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs come. And I got stuck for 10 years.
You got sidetracked.
I got sidetracked. Yeah.
Well, you obviously enjoyed it.
I loved it.
And it's funny that. Because you would never have considered that
exactly.
as an option for yourself.
At all. At all. And the interesting part is that I started as a personal assistant for the chairman of one of the banks, who was my forever best coach, I would say.
Mentor, idol.
Yes, mentor and idol and coach. And I think a lot of the habits that I now have and the skills that I now have.
And presumably the work ethic as well.
Absolutely.
You would have learned from him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So he was an icon. He was the first Arab to preside the International Chamber of Commerce.
What's his name?
Adnan Assar. He was the chairman of France Bank Group. The first Arab to chair the International Chamber of Commerce. He was the chairman also of the Ittihad al-Ghuraf al-Arabi as well. So very iconic person locally, regionally, and globally. And I used to go with him on all his business trips. So the exposure that I got at a very early age was immense.
Yeah.
At a very C-high exclusive level. He was a very, very tough manager, but he would get the best out of you. And actually, he made me discover all the talents that I have. So from 2 years as his close personal assistant running his business at the bank and then his private business in terms of regional commerce
yeah.
and being involved in the files of the International Chamber of Commerce, which kind of satisfied my diplomatic mm-hmm, part, mm-hmm. if you want, to telling me, you are a marketeer profile.
He kind of identified that this is your strong area.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And it was on a specific big event that I fully led, also by coincidence, because my manager then decided to quit. So I was the only option.
Yes.
And he gave me this assignment, mm-hmm. which was super big pressure. It was, I remember, it was the 30th anniversary of the International Chamber of Commerce. So the guest list was the Dutch and Duchess
of course, what, and people coming from all over the place.
Exactly, the CEO of yeah. Nestle Global, this level yes. of calibers. And I think I did pretty well, mm-hmm. specifically from an ownership perspective. And this is where he told me, your next move is into the marketing world because you do have it.
And you've reached the top with him.
Yes.
So it's time that you went into
exactly.
another area.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I moved to the marketing in the bank. Mm-hmm. Started as a junior as well because there were people who were there a lot ahead of me.
Yep.
And I grew my team year on year, grew my role year on year until I, the last of which was the head of advertising and communication for the group.
And the group is called?
France Bank Group. So I did the launch in Algeria. I did the launch in Syria. I did the launch in Iraq. We had some business in Libya as well. So it gave me a lot of also regional exposure, cultural.
Yes. One. And from there, you stayed how long in the bank at that position?
For 8 years. I'm someone who loves growing where I am. And I think this is one of the special things that I always do, you know, I don't take the role as it is, you know, as a job description.
Yeah.
I always like to create and innovate and grow my role.
It also strikes me that you like consistency.
Yes.
And you like to be in one place for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
Which is unusual in today's world.
Absolutely.
Because people jump from thing to thing. They get headhunted quickly to leave. They get bored. They want to go start their own thing. But you're very much in a very traditional job path, actually, like people used to do it a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that young.
No, but maybe that's why, actually. Maybe yeah. because you had that exposure to people doing that.
Absolutely.
And that was your
Absolutely.
Model.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, change is always good.
Yes.
And we don't want to be blockers for other people to grow and to move as
yes.
well. But as long as your job is giving you the satisfaction and the creativity to innovate and to change within the same environment, I mean, why not?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And I think, you know, within my Lebanese experience, I had different experiences, even within marketing.
Of course.
You know, from internal communication to external communication to media relations to comms. So the role by itself expanded.
And in the end, you ended up using your diplomatic skills.
Exactly.
Because in these kinds of roles, firstly, you're doing cross-country work.
Absolutely.
You're managing a team. You're growing a department. That all takes a lot of negotiation, a lot of diplomacy.
Absolutely. And I always tell, you know, the younger people that I deal with that education is not really about the exact content that you acquire. It's about the skills that you acquire. And I think
agree.
The diplomatic and consular services, they help me a lot in my interpersonal skills.
Of course.
I would say, you know, how to deal with the C-level people, complicated situations, complex situations, crisis management, all of those, which eventually I'm still using
of
today
course.
In my job.
When we return, a personal pivot brings Malak to Egypt. That's after this break. This episode is brought to you by EFG Holding. For 40 years, EFG Holding has been realizing more for its clients across its three distinct verticals: EFG Hermes, the investment bank, EFG Finance, the non-bank financial institutions platform, and AI Bank, the commercial bank for clients looking to EFG Holding as a gateway to the most compelling equities in frontier and emerging markets. EFG Holding is for investors looking into renewables, healthcare, and education, for consumers seeking innovative solutions to achieve financial freedom, from purchasing a home to educating their children, for businesses of all sizes working to unlock their full potential, for shareholders who require visibility, profitability, and confidence in our growth strategies, and for communities in need of sustainable development to drive change. EFG Holding's goal is to build an ecosystem of businesses that work seamlessly together to provide clients with best-in-class, end-to-end financial solutions at every stage of their lives or the growth of their businesses, creating a positive impact on our society, economy, and the environment. EFG Holding is a trailblazing financial institution with a universal bank in Egypt and the leading investment bank in the Middle East and North Africa. See the world differently and realize more with EFG Holding. Welcome back. You're listening to What I Did Next with my guest, Malak El Baba.
Your husband and you met well before you got you decided to get married, and then it didn't happen, and then you got together again.
Yes.
When you met the first time, you were still living in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? Why did you stop?
I was the runaway bride.
You were the runaway bride.
Yes.
Julia Roberts is in
Julia
my show.
Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Malak Roberts.
Are you Malak Roberts?
Yeah, actually, I panicked. I panicked mm-hmm. back then. Maybe because it's, again, back to my consistency part and
yes.
the love of the consistency.
Yes.
I just, you know, thought I'm not ready for this very big move.
And were you young?
I was very young. 21, probably.
Oh, no wonder. Malak, that's a baby. I was 21, I couldn't, you know, think further ahead than the next week.
Yeah, I was very young.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I still need to stay with my parents. I want my mom.
Yes.
And it was a very big change in terms of, you know, moving to another country.
And he was already in Egypt, so you would have had to move at that time here.
Yes. The plan was to move to Egypt.
Yeah.
He's Egyptian
yes.
as well. So although the Lebanese and the Egyptian cultures are very similar,
yes.
but definitely there are also differences.
Of course.
So I don't think I was mature enough to grasp those
Fair
differences
enough.
From both sides, actually.
21 is very young.
Yeah, so I decided to...
to not go through with it.
Exactly. And in a very healthy and friendly way, at least from my side.
Yeah. No, that's very impressive that you had the ability at that age to say no.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of girls and boys who marry young, and a lot of the time it doesn't work.
And actually, in my family, it is a kind of a taboo, you know, just to break up with your fiancé or get divorced or especially back then, you know, we're talking about almost 20 years back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was the first in the family to say no.
But you said no before the wedding, which is the more important thing.
Yes, exactly. Which, naturally, you know, in my part of the world, it was like, let's work it out.
Yes, yes, you know? Yes, yes.
I was really surprised that my parents supported me,
mm-hmm.
gladly surprised, yes, yes. I would say. And they made me, you know, make the choice and be accountable for it as well.
You know, I think, Malak, when you're close to your parents and you have an open line of communication,
yes,
they know that you know what you need.
Exactly.
And they are there to support
they
you.
They trust you.
And they trust you.
They trust you.
You know?
They trust
so
you.
So you're very lucky to have had that. Mm. I have that with my family. And it's a privilege.
Absolutely.
So that's a very nice thing that they had your back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had my back.
Exactly.
That's the right word.
Yeah.
That's the right word. 10 years later, we bump again into each other by mere coincidence in a third country. And then, you know, the relationship ignites again as friends first. And I think he was very much present in the deterioration of my mom's health situation, him and his family. And I think that was a very big green flag, mm-hmm. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Very positive thing.
Very positive thing. From two mature people, I would say. And here we are, married with
and
a son.
Your mother must have been very surprised. How was her reaction
to the
second phase of this relationship?
So surprisingly, actually, my mom, at the very first time, she wasn't the happiest because she wanted me at some point of time, even if I'm going to go and live abroad, to come back to Lebanon. And marrying someone who's not Lebanese, I mean, that's not an option. So she always questioned this. And I think she was a bit happy when I broke up. I have to admit. The interesting part is that, you know, every time I met someone or somebody proposed, you know, the official way,
yes,
she would say, one day you will marry Amr.
Interesting.
And I was like, Mom, I'm in Asia. He's in Africa. And there's absolutely no connection.
And you hadn't stayed in touch.
I mean, every now and then.
Yes.
Something happens.
Yes.
When Israel bombed Beirut, he called.
Sure.
So, you know, those.
But every now and again.
Every now
yeah,
and then.
Yeah.
And then when we met again, I think she was pleasantly surprised because she knows, you know, that there are the fundamentals.
And the spark was always there.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, Malak, how it's all about timing.
It's all about timing.
Because the person was right for you from the beginning. But you weren't ready.
Right person, wrong time, maybe. And I think definitely this 10 years gap has benefited us both.
Yes.
You know, the exposure that we both got in our personal and our professional lives made us appreciate the other person. And the maturity that we acquired, I think that was a game changer, I would say.
Yeah. So 10 years after having first gotten together, you got back together, you eventually got married, and you moved to Egypt.
Actually, there's a funny part to this one as
well.
When we got married, so we went to the honeymoon, and then we got back to Beirut, you know, for 2 weeks' time. And I told him, I'm not ready to move. Again.
Bombshell.
And he was like, take your time. And it just took me 3 months. You know?
Okay, that's not so
it
long.
It just took me 3 months.
That's
you know?
Okay.
It's like, okay. And he slowly, and I love how he did not put any pressure. And I think this is what made it super quick. I used to come every weekend.
Yeah. The ball was in your court.
Exactly.
You're the one who wants to be in control of it.
He made me feel empowered.
Yes, exactly.
And I love this feeling.
Yeah.
So 3 months I moved, and then I was into the, also the shift or the transition from FrançaBank to Visa as the marketing manager back then of North and Francophone
Africa.
And
we're talking 2011?
2011.
So this is our revolution?
Yes. We got engaged on, I think it was the 21st of January. His parents or his family were in Beirut. They left the day before the revolution started, he got stuck for a month in Lebanon, and he made use of this to go on skiing classes, doing nothing. I had to go back to my work. We got married in September, so I moved in September,
right after
the revolution, but it was the year of the mess.
And it was a very difficult time, of course, you know that, and to move to this country when all of that was in turmoil was a big risk.
It was.
But interesting that you did it.
I did it.
Yeah.
I come from, I'm war generation.
Absolutely.
Well.
This is easy for you.
That was easy
you.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, you know, when I first came here, he didn't want me to drive out of security. So he hired a driver for me. And then it took me a month to say no. You know, I need my space.
I need to control the car.
I need to, yeah, exactly.
I want privacy.
I want privacy. Yeah, yeah. I want my space. Yeah. You know, I used to drive in bombs around me, literally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm
you are comfortable with it.
I'm comfortable.
When we come back, Malak tells me about her career move to Visa and how her work there is so vital to how she sees her legacy. That's after this break. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, you can find out more about the screenwriting process with acclaimed filmmaker Mo Hefzi, or about the luxury design industry with Monez and Aya Abdelraouf, the sisters behind Ochtin. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show. Welcome back. You're listening to my conversation with Malak Elbaba.
Tell me about Visa. What is it about Visa that attracted you?
So pre-Visa, whenever I used to write a brief to my agency, there was a section where we used to put kind of a referral or, you know, a company or a brand as an example to whatever brief you want to have. And surprisingly, Visa was always one of those examples that I've put. I've always loved the brand for what it stood for, for what it looked for visually as well. And definitely the principles behind it. You know, it's just this, there is one company that can literally connect millions and millions of people every second from around the world. I mean, what better cause could any company have?
Yeah.
So when I was looking for jobs in Egypt, definitely it was the first one that I've applied for. And I still remember the call that I got from the recruiter from London telling me, you have an interview. I was in my small office in Beirut and I was literally jumping all over. You know, it was a dream for
me. You were really happy. Yeah,
I was so excited.
Yeah.
And actually, when I moved into the company, I realized how lucky I am even further.
It met your expectations?
It exceeded my expectations,
I would because say. That's very unusual.
Yes, it exceeded my expectations. I think the people, the culture, there is a strong belief in what we want to do and the change that we want to do around the world. And I think it really stems out from the vision that our founder had. So our founder, Dihak, said, you know, it was at the time where money was all cash or checks. Okay, why don't we digitize this? Mm-hmm. And why don't we make the money move in the speed of light? And he did it. I mean, this guy was a visionary. And this is where the name of Visa came. It's the access that you give to all those people, to me sending money to you, helping my son, paying for our...
It's the facade, the ease of it.
The convenience,
the convenience of it.
The access that it gives to many people, the capabilities.
So you began in marketing with them.
Yes.
And at the beginning, your remit was Egypt and the Middle East?
No, I was North Africa and Francophone Africa.
I see. Okay.
So all the Côte d'Ivoire's and this part of the world.
And are you Francophone?
French is my third language.
Okay. So you can, you know how to work in French.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, marketing is a global...
It's English language.
And it's a global language.
That's right.
As long as you know... Or as long as you put an effort to understand the local nuances of the market, then the language is...
And presumably Visa had offices in all these places.
No.
Oh, no, they didn't.
No, actually, no.
So you were managing it from here?
From Cairo. And actually, I still remember my my interview with a GM who hired me here. Because in Lebanon, I had a team of 15 people reporting into me.
Yes.
And he said, this is a self-contributor role. How do you see yourself doing this? You know, especially that I think there were 32 markets that I used to lead. And I was like, I'll do it.
And at the time, you were all alone?
Yes. I stayed all by myself in marketing for a good 8 years.
Wow, Malak, that's a lot.
Yes.
That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work.
And traveling a lot, I'm assuming.
Yes. A lot of travel, a lot of work, a lot of markets, a lot of internal stakeholders that you need to manage.
Of course.
A lot of external stakeholders that you need to manage as well. So again, back to the diplomatic
Absolutely.
And consular services.
Yeah,
I think that helped a lot.
Yeah.
Navigating through the different needs of everyone.
Of course.
And managing this properly. So I moved into several marketing roles, the last of which was the senior director for marketing for North Africa, Levant, and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I was heading the agency's relations for MENA. And this is where I started, you know, growing the team and hiring more people.
And then at some point, they were looking for a country head, and they obviously looked internal.
Yes.
Internally. How did you adjust your role? How did you make that jump into a completely different kind of work, actually?
So in career, I strongly believe that, you know, everyone owns his or her own career path and trajectory. So I was very much aware of what I wanted to do. I think the marketing kind of satisfied the passion that I had for the movie direction and the art person in me.
The creative side of
The creative
of
side of
yeah.
me. And this is a very big side that I still have to
yes.
do. And I always tell my team now in business, you know, when we're pitching, when we're doing any business, it's all about storytelling.
Yes, of course.
I'm a strong believer in storytelling. So I was very clear on having a CMO track. And this is where I was very focused in terms of education, upskilling myself, growing my role, so on and so forth. And then I had our GM back then coming to me saying, I want you to apply for the country manager's role. I was like, I'm not, you're crazy. I'm an advertising person, I'm a comms person. And he said, at this level, we're looking for a set of skills, not a set of competencies. So I don't want you to be a technical person. I want the leadership skills that you have and that we have experienced with you in several mega projects. So I was someone who always raised his hand or her hand in, you know, putting my nose in different...
You were proactive about your role.
About my role and...
And your vision for the business.
And in an expanded way.
Yes.
So, you know, every time there was a complex discussion or something happening with a client, I would say, okay, I can go and help. You know, I have good relations with this client.
And presumably, you were a team player across all departments.
Absolutely.
And that's key.
Absolutely.
That's key.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This definitely helped.
Of course.
And I think my curiosity helped. My proactiveness helped. My ability to bring people together, I think that was the main edge that I had.
If you were to look back at yourself, if you're looking back at your career, where would you see your biggest impact being?
The teams that I have built, the empowerment of people, being an enabler to let even few people discover the talents that they might have and not aware of, similar to the experience that I personally went through.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the where my passion is, you know, dealing with people, dealing with teams, even with clients as well. But I think the empowerment and the enablement and the growth of people around me is something that I think I do well. I can definitely do more. So I'm working very much on my coaching skills nowadays.
This
keeps me quite busy.
Good.
As an executive.
Yeah.
And I hope this is the legacy that I would
leave. That's a great legacy to have. Thank you, Malak. That was amazing.
Thank you.
That was really great.
It was really nice.
That was my episode with Malak Elbaba, Egypt Country Manager for Visa. Malak also leads Visa's Women Leadership Network for MENA and is the winner of several Market Leadership Awards, including 4 MENA Effies and 2 Media Efficiency Awards. If you're a member of the show, you'll get Malak's bonus episode next week, where we talk more about the transformative nature of digital payments for the region, as well as more on her current role. You can also find extended clips from our episodes on YouTube and connect with us on Instagram, X, and on LinkedIn. Just search for What I Did Next. Thank you for joining me today. You've been listening to What I Did Next from A&T Media. I'm Malak Fouad, and the show is produced by Chirag Desai. See you in a couple of weeks.